closed captioned for the reality impaired. It's the Jerry Bader Show.
I want to stare at the hour by just briefly, because I got so much to get to, and I have only an hour to do it. That's what I want to start on explaining. Seth Mila takes the reins at 10:06. I take to the air, not the airwaves, just the air, to Dallas for the Americans for Prosperity Defending the American Dream Summit tomorrow. Have a lot of guests lined up already, trying to get some big names as well. There's some big names down there. And really looking forward to it. Hot down there. I'm looking forward to it, though. I really am. I believe tomorrow afternoon I'm going to make my way to the JFK Museum. It's a 10-minute walk from my hotel. It's, like, right there. Yeah, so it's really, I didn't know that. So I'm definitely going to do that. Very excited about that. But more excited about the program that we'll be bringing you from Dallas. So as a result, my flight leaves in such time that I can't do the whole show today. So I've already spent 30 seconds more than I should explaining all of that to you because, man, I want to cover stuff thoroughly and in an interesting manner, but I want to get to a lot of stuff. So here we go. I want to start out with a trio of very strange stories. And I'm not sure which is the strangest, although I have my vote. Jason and I talked about this off the air yesterday, but time didn't allow to get to it on the air. That's the story of Josh Shaw, the USC football player who has taught a lesson again that apparently we never learned. You can't believe anyone anymore. You can't. Look at the track record. Jason wanted to believe Lance Armstrong. I didn't believe Lance Armstrong. I was right. Jason wanted to believe Ryan Braun. I didn't believe Ryan Braun. I was right. I don't remember where you came down on Brett Favre initially. Yeah, but, you know, with the whole Jets, or with the, what was her name? The texts. Jen Sturger? Yeah. I don't believe anybody anymore. I just don't. And when the story came out that he sprained both ankles jumping from a balcony to save a drowning nephew, I didn't believe it. USC did, and they made the mistake of putting it on their website and lauding him as a hero. The story began to unravel. He has now had to admit that he made the whole thing up. He's still not saying how he hurt his ankles. It was in a fall. He has retained an attorney, never a good sign, but he says he's not involved in any criminal activity because there's the suspicion that he was. So the story's still weird in that we don't know how he sprained both ankles. You can surmise that it was jumping from a scene that he needed to get the hell away from in a hurry, and came up with a preposterous cover story. How did he think that story was ever going to stick? The whole thing was made up. There's a very immature young man who didn't think that whole story would unravel. I mean, you can't make up a scenario where the kid was never in the pool or anything. Come on. That would be like Jason saying, well, why are you late for work today? Oh, I rescued a child from a burning building. Really? Which building was on fire? That one on the corner, you know, down there by the gas station. Yeah, which corner? Which gas station? It sounds as though USC didn't do any of that. Why do these things happen? Because people want to believe. One of my fondest memories, if I do this show for another 40 years, which I doubt, but if I do, well, I'd be 93. If I do it for another 30 years, Another 20. 20 years is very doable. It is. With Social Security being gone, I might not have a choice. One of my fondest memories is going to be when I played the text, the voicemail recordings. That's not Brett. That's not Brett. No, that's not Brett Favre. That's not Brett. That's not Brett. Why did people... Did people really think that wasn't Brett Favre? Of course not. They so desperately wanted to believe that it wasn't Brett, and they're risking nothing by coming on the air because no one knows who they are, and they made fools of themselves defending a guy when it was obviously him. Lance Armstrong. Look at the emails we got about Lance Armstrong. You wonder what percent of the public still believes O.J. Simpson. They should do a poll on that. They should do a poll because we're in that 20-year range of the trial upcoming. I think it should be pretty soon. We're actually the murders were June 94, right? So the murders were just 20 years ago. What percentage of the public do you think still believes O.J. Simpson did not kill his wife and her friend? What percent now of the whole public? Well, here you go, Jason. What percent of the black community do you think still believes he's innocent? I'll bet you it's upwards of half. Jason says no. I'll bet you it is. They should do that. They should do a poll today. Even though he lost a civil suit. In 1995, it'll be 20, the acquittal. I want to say it was October. He, $33 million settlement against him. But he's never going to pay a dime of that. It's not, or very, very little of it. October 3rd. Look at the memory on me. Every once in a while. Every once in a while. It's amazing the things that I have stored in there. It would be really curious to know. Okay, item two. Ala Pundit wrote about this on hotair.com. This is really stunning to me. ESPN created a stir when they reported that rookie linebacker of the Rams, Michael Sam, was waiting to take showers so as not to make his straight teammates feel uncomfortable. They have apologized for reporting that. I don't know that I've ever seen anything quite like this. It doesn't, because they don't appear to be saying it's false. They just appear to be saying they shouldn't have reported it. After it found itself at the epicenter of a storm of criticism over a report on the shower habits of Michael Sam, the first openly gay player on the NFL roster, and his teammates, ESPN responded Wednesday morning with a further statement on the matter. ESPN regrets the manner in which we presented our report. Clearly, yesterday, we collectively failed to meet the standards we have set in reporting on LGBT-related topics in sports. What standard would that be? In its initial response to the firestorm, ESPN responded Tuesday. In response to recent questions about Sam fitting in with the team, multiple Rams brought up the shower topic, and we relayed that information as part of our reporting. Clearly, it felt it was necessary to walk that back on Wednesday. Why? What are they apologizing for? Is the story accurate? They're not saying it wasn't accurate. They're not saying that. What they're saying is they don't, upon further review, they don't think it's information they should have shared. Why? They, as Ala Pundit points out at hotair.com, The whole notion of how Michael Sam would fit in was the whole narrative, the whole storyline of why he was a media sensation. So a follow-up story that he's got to navigate fitting in is inappropriate? Why? That's what the whole deal was. Will he fit in? And they apparently found a story that suggests it's a bit of a challenge. They're not, it would be different if they were retracting the story. They're not retracting the story. They're simply saying, we shouldn't have told you. Then there is this one. This is the most bizarre, and this has gotten very little media attention. Again, this scenario from HotAir.com. A guy and his two sons are pushing their car along a road in Texas. They were almost home. They're like 100 yards from their house, and they run out of gas. So they're pushing the car home. You familiar with this one, Jason? Another car comes barreling along and smashes into the rear of their vehicle, crushing one of the kids instantly and throwing the other far enough that he later dies from his injuries. The driver who caused this mayhem is drunk. He's unconscious at the scene in the driver's seat. When the cops arrive a short time later, he has a bullet in his head. The father of the two sons is charged with murder. Seems pretty obvious what happened. He's 100 yards from his home. He ran home, got a gun, and shot the guy that killed his sons. That's not the way a jury saw it. He has been found not guilty. Two witnesses, William Taylor Duncan and Landon Lane, testified they saw the crash while driving home together that night. They pulled over when flagged down for help by a man saying his son had been hit. Each teen told jurors the man who flagged them down, asking them to help his children, was not at the crash site for about 3 minutes. They say he later returned and approached the Malibu. The teens testified they later heard a gunshot, but neither say they saw anyone with a weapon. They couldn't produce the gun. And there's more. A woman came upon the accident scene and saw a man who appeared angry, although she couldn't or wouldn't identify him as the boy's father. It goes on. A cousin of the drunk driver later claimed he saw the boy's father punch the driver through the window of his car. The defense showed at trial the driver's window was intact and rolled up when the police got there, but the prosecution countered the father might have simply opened the driver's door and punched him that way instead. The gun was never found. No gunshot residue was discovered on the father's hands. But if he didn't do it, so some random stranger came up and shot this guy? Verdict, not guilty, a la pundit writes. I think that's right, given the lack of direct evidence and the high bar of beyond a reasonable doubt. But come on here. The father is the only person with the means, motive, and opportunity here, right? The idea of a stranger swinging by an accident scene to execute a victim in the small window of time between the crash and the moment police show up is ridiculous. If that's what happened, why weren't the boys shot too? It's a good question. Okay, do I think the father did it? Yes. Yes. Do I agree with the verdict? Yes. I do. This is one of those things where how much faith or how much stock is a jury supposed to put in the fact that it seems impossible that anyone else could have done it? Is that what you use to guide your verdict, or do you go directly to the evidence that does or doesn't link him to the crime? Because if this didn't happen in an isolated area 100 yards from his house, this is a much easier not guilty verdict, right? Because then it could have been anyone. It couldn't have been anyone else in this case, could it? So, given the fact that it's an isolated area, let me take it to an extreme. Suppose this happened on an island where there are the only four people on the island. Well, now there's no doubt, right? Unless someone parachutes in, does it, and swims away, which is almost what you're believing here. But the no residue thing on the hands is pretty big. But okay, did they search the area for a glove? Surgical gloves. All right, what did he do with it? This is the most bizarre thing. Buried surgical gloves. Okay, did he plan this? Did he go around in life thinking, if anyone ever kills my two kids in a car accident, that son of a bitch is going to get shot, and I have a plan to do it? Is that what he did? That's why he's not guilty, because he planned this whole thing out. It's, I don't know. You don't call it probable cause that he didn't do it. You call it reasonable doubt. Is there reasonable doubt? Reasonable is not defined in the law. I once saw a jury in Sheboygan County ask the judge to define reasonable for them. And they're like, no, the law relies on your reason to reason this out. It's the reasonable conclusion of 12 people. Were I on that jury, would I have acquitted? Would I have voted to acquit or convict? Based on what I know? How much should you take into the count? Well, who the hell's did it? Space aliens? It's 9:23.
The Jerry Bader Show.